Hi, this is Trevor Cole, and I'm going to read from my new novel, Practical Jean, which is the story of Jean Hormarsh, who's in her early 50s. She lives in a small town called Kotemi, and she loves to make ceramics. She's very oriented toward things that are beautiful. The trouble is that she has just had to spend 3 long months taking care of her dying mother, who died of a very painful and debilitating cancer. And this has sort of changed Jean's perspective. She's coming home now after these 3 months. She's a little shell-shocked by the experience she's had. And just as the novel begins, she is sitting down with her husband. She's just come home from the funeral. And it's starting to, she's starting to process what she's been through. And of course, she makes a decision later on in the novel, which isn't good for her friends. But at this stage, she is just dealing with the horror of what she's just experienced. Jean let her chin rest on her chest. Never had she been so exhausted and yet so relieved. The exhaustion and relief seeped through her muscles and bones, a bad and good feeling all at once. This must be the way athletes feel, Jean thought, after they've run 1,000 miles and won the game. She let the sensation slip through her like one of those drugs that young people take, and allowed her mind to drift backward to the funeral at First United Presbyterian. Everyone had been there, 100 Kotemi folk who'd known Marjorie Hormarsh as the best veterinarian they'd ever brought a sick spaniel to, and not as a mother who'd praised only marks and commendations and money and prizes and never beauty, never, ever beauty for its own sake. And not as a patient who moaned in pain 17 hours a day and smelled like throw-up and needed to be bathed and fed and have her putrid bedsores swabbed and dressed. It was nice to see your friends there, said Milt. We should have them all over some day. Jean stared at the ceiling and sighed. What's the point, Milt? Well, the house has been pretty quiet. You could play bridge like you used to. No, Milt, I'm not talking about that. I'm saying what's the point of anything? Oh. Milt tossed his head back against the chair cushion as if to say, wow, that's a big one. Exactly, said Jean. You know, you think about a lot of things when you're taking care of your dying mother. Milt leaned forward in his chair. Did you want a drink? He rose and steadied himself. His tie was askew, and the end of it rested against the mound of his belly, a little like a dying leaf against a pumpkin, Jean considered. I will have some white wine. She lifted her voice to talk as Milt made his way to the kitchen. You think about things, Milt, she said. You ask yourself questions. What sort of questions? No white, I'm afraid. Red? Fine. Big questions, like, what's the point of anything? Right. You live and then you die, Milt, and whatever you had is gone, and it doesn't matter anymore. Nothing matters forever and ever. Wow, said Milt on his way back with the glasses. So what is the point? He handed her the wine. You want me to answer that? I don't think you can answer that. I don't think anyone can. I think the point is to live the best life possible for as long as you're able. Jean, still sunk into the cushions and drugged with exhaustion, sipped her wine and picked at the threads of ideas and formulations and fantasies that had occupied her mind for the last couple of months, while she'd fed her mother unsweetened pablum, while she'd stared at her thick, unweeded garden, while she'd kneeled alone in the ensuite bathroom, cleaning the dried spray of urine from the floor where her mother had slipped. Beauty is the point, I think. There you go, you answered it yourself. A moment of beauty or joy, something exquisite and pure. She made a face. I hate this red wine. Did you open it a week ago? About that. I'm not drinking it, she set it on the coffee table. That's it for bad wine. Did you want me to drive and get some white? Yes, but not now, not while we're talking. For a while she stared at the coffee table, at the wine yawing in the glass. More than once, Milt, she said, more than once when I was feeding Mom in bed, and she would lay her head back and fall asleep. I thought about pinching her nose and her lips closed and just holding them like that, holding them tight. Until she died? Until she died. Wow, said Milt. His eyes went wide as he shook his head. He looked, Jean thought, as though he were really taking it in. Because what is the difference? She shifted to the edge of the cushion. Whether you die now or die later, it's the same thing, but one way has less suffering. They do it for animals. My own mother did it. I watched it happen. Even now, her mind filled with bright images, sudden whites and reds. in the very early days of her mother's career, when she'd had few clients and couldn't justify the cost of a clinic, Marjorie had used their kitchen table spread with sheets of white plastic to perform operations. She had allowed little Jean, who was the oldest of her children, to observe. This was real life, she said, no need to hide it, as she sliced open neighborhood cats and dogs to pluck out their ovaries or spleens, or to reattach bloody tendons. Many times before she was 7, Jean had watched her mother stick a hypodermic into the fur of some aged or diseased animal, watched her press the plunger and wait out the quiet seconds until its eyes closed. That was the simplest act of all, and the kindest, it now seemed to Jean. "It's called mercy, Milt. That's what it's called. Don't let a living thing suffer. I should have done it. I hate myself for not doing it." "Don't hate yourself, Jean." Jean stared and lost herself in a scene that had come to her several times before, projected like a movie against the backs of her eyelids while she slumped in the chair in Marjorie's darkened room, listening to her mother breathe. She saw her hand reaching down. In her imagination, it was always morning. Daylight filled the room, and everything was a pale pink. And squeezing her mother's soft nostrils between thumb and forefinger, the way you might seal the mouth of an inflated balloon. With the other hand, she held her lips closed, too. Then the image changed, and she was pressing down on her mother's mouth. Yes, that would work better, squeezing her nostrils and clamping down hard on her mouth. It wouldn't have been difficult. Her mother was weak, and Jean's hands were muscled tools from years of working with clay. Marjorie's eyes would open. She'd be terrified, staring up at her daughter, fighting for her life, not realizing Jean's way was so much better. But it would only last a moment, that struggle, unlike the pain of her lingering disease. And afterward there'd be no recriminations, no feelings of betrayal, no abiding resentments. There'd be nothing, because that's what death was. "I should have killed my mother, Milt," Jean felt the tears puddling in her eyes. "I should have killed her before she got so sick. Then she wouldn't have had to suffer at all." He came to her and put his hand on her knee. "You were a good daughter to her, Jean. You took care of her." "Not like I should have." She reached into her sleeve for the tissue she'd tucked there and used it to dry her eyes, though it was painful to believe that she had failed her mother by not taking her life. Her conviction in that belief was, in an odd way, comforting. Certainty energized her. She took a deep breath and looked into Milt's sad gray eyes. Such a sweet man. "If you wanted to screw me," she said to Milt, "I'd be game." Milt looked down at his hand on her knee and off to the powder room. "I don't think I can now." She sighed. "That's annoying." "I can try." "No, never mind." She patted his hand. "I'd be just as happy with some white wine." Thank you.